This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. And, you know, we have to give it up for the House. House Nation. That's right. The House of Representatives, constitutionally supposed to be the first to recommend laws on taxes and fiscal matters, became the last governmental body to vote yesterday, finally, for the latest stopgap measure to prevent all those automatic tax increases and spending cuts called the fiscal cliff. The president clearly wasn't worried about birth order as he thanked Congress for this legislative progeny.
Thanks to the votes of Democrats and Republicans in Congress, I will sign a law that raises taxes on the wealthiest 2% of Americans while preventing a middle-class tax hike that could have sent the economy back into recession and obviously had a severe impact on families all across America.
The impact on Obama's family as he's back in Hawaii restarting his vacation. This whole thing is not fixed, the mess. But at least things didn't get any more broken after this latest fiscal cliff deal was made. The package includes tax increases for Americans that make more than $400,000, that's for individuals, and $450,000 for couples. It makes tax cuts for incomes below that level permanent. Spending cuts become the order or orders of business right now. Joining us now is Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Todd, is it fixed? Is spending cuts the order of the day? And is that going to be a hard fight?
Boy, that's three questions. It's not fixed, John. I would like to tell you that the fiscal cliff was the last in this serial soap opera of crises that we've been dealing with, but it's really not. In terms of the crisis we just went through, the fiscal cliff, I'm thinking of it sort of, you know how Indiana Jones, he goes over the cliff and he kind of catches a crag on the
right.
way down. You know,
right,
so
right.
That's kind of, we got pulled back up from the cliff. But just like in one of those movies, the danger isn't over. And here's why. Primarily, the sequester part of it, the automatic spending cuts, part of this deal only delayed those automatic spending cuts for 2 months. So that means right around February or March, the sequester comes back. But as if that weren't bad enough, it's plopped right on top of the expiration of the debt limit. And then there's more. But then you might be asking yourself, does it really have to be this way? Do Republicans in this case really need to use the debt limit again to extract concessions on spending? Do we have to lurch to the next crisis, the next shutdown, the next debt limit? Well, I talked to one Republican, one Tea Party Republican. Listen to Blake Fahrenthold. He was elected in 2010. He's from Corpus Christi, Texas. We had a conversation last night as the fiscal cliff vote was unfolding about what he thinks is the future of this sort of serial crisis mode that we're in. Listen to Fahrenthold.
You know, I don't like the drama any more than the next person likes the drama. But if we're going to move forward, we've got to use the leverage points that we have. And that may mean we're up against some other deadlines. It may not be the best way to do it. It may not be what any of us want. But we're going to move forward with our conservative agenda however we can.
I don't know. He sounds pretty weary there, Todd. It seems like Mitch McConnell is running things there in the GOP caucus, even in the House. And I mean, President Obama looks pretty good coming out of this one.
President Obama has said in no uncertain terms he will entertain no discussions on the debt limit. And that's what he says. But Speaker John Boehner is under enormous pressure from people like Blake Fahrenthold that you heard there to use the debt limit for maximum leverage. A lot of what you heard from Republicans after accepting this deal last night, John, you win this round, President Obama. We didn't get any spending cuts, but next round is going to be all about spending cuts. Now, the president has spoken to this. He has said, we are going to do more debt reduction. We are going to do tax reform. We will have to deal with the sequester. Oh, and by the way, government funding runs out March 27th. What does that mean? Government shutdown. There's another cliff for you that's coming up in the late winter, early spring. And President Obama has seen this coming. He has said, we are going to use what? A balanced approach. It's not going to be just spending cuts. There's going to be new revenue too. Republicans, including the speaker, putting their foot down saying, oh, no. The next round is all about spending cuts. So we're headed for this scenario again. I'm sorry to say, whether the speaker uses the threat of a debt limit expiration and a default to its maximum effect remains to be seen. There's a lot of reason to think that he won't, but there's plenty of reason to think that he will, and I don't think that decision has been made yet.
Although this all takes place without the backdrop of a presidential presidential election and primaries going forward. It seems to me Paul Ryan looks like a much more cooperative fellow in this incarnation than he was as a candidate.
Interesting that Paul Ryan voted with the speaker last night on the fiscal cliff deal. He voted yes on this. Who voted no over in the Senate? Marco Rubio. The speaker vote, you know, speakers of the House don't often vote. They only vote when it's symbolically very important. The speaker had to come to the floor and vote yes on this deal in order to bless it. But you know who else voted no, which is interesting? Eric Cantor, the majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, the majority whip, and a leader of the Young Guns and the Tea Party caucus, at least in leadership style. They voted no, not with the speaker. So those fractures in the House Republican conference and with the Senate clear. Let's spare ourselves talking too much about 2016, but you can take those votes on a tax increase between Rubio and Ryan for what they are.
Well, what about the new Congress? I mean, can we stir up some trouble between Cantor and Boehner here? Can you go find out if Cantor's gunning for the speakership?
There is. I actually have some information for you on that. There's no indication. Look, only 85 Republicans voted for this deal. 172 Democrats voted for it. That's usually very, very risky ground for a speaker. What's working in John Boehner's favor here? The speaker election is only 48 hours away. Not a lot of time for someone to challenge him. A couple of people who might be potential candidates for speaker or to challenge John Boehner have said they're not running, even though there's a lot of pressure from conservative groups and the conservative blogosphere to, quote, fire Boehner. There doesn't look like there's an heir apparent right now. And even though Eric Cantor voted against that deal last night, it is notable that yesterday afternoon when the Republicans were going through these gesticulations and it looked like the deal may fall apart, Eric Cantor and John Boehner entered the House Republican conference meeting literally shoulder to shoulder, shoulders touching as they walk down the hall together in an optical show of unity. Nothing is certain. It would be very, very, very surprising if there were a serious challenge mounted to John Boehner. Maybe symbolic, but not serious.
Listening to the House music there in the House of Representatives, Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much.
Pleasure, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.